fucking lose this game! They're gonna fucking lose this game! I hate Nicky Calvo! I hate Nicky Calvo! He's smiling! He wasn't smiling before! He's smiling! Really wants to go out there, you go! I wanna praise you like I should! You have to dance around like this fucking video!
Pain and misery. Misery and pain. Pain, aggravation, misery, torture. Torture. That is what it's like to be a Mets fan. Welcome to Allow Me to Be Frank. Once again, my guests are Patrick Rugazzo from Mets Marais Online, Avery Zaretsky, and we got our social media guy, Nick, here. Ugh. You know, it's no wonder I'm not in the insane ward. I mean, Bellevue calling. Although here in New Jersey, for some reason, we named our famous hospital, our major mental hospital, is now named after a clothing store, Anne Klein. So you go in Anne Klein, and there's a half price sale, and then they keep you in the back.
I don't know what to say to that, Frank. What an open. What an open.
Well, Frank, isn't your apartment complex, I heard, was being renamed the new psych ward in Belleville, New Jersey, between you and Ralph?
Yeah. I mean, I hear it all the time. I hear, of course, you get the he's a famous WF fan caller, so he's called up all the major programs talking about what Andrew Luck has done to the Colts, what he thinks Andrew Luck has done personally to him. I mean,
what has been his take about that? Because I haven't heard. I was with you the night of the retirement, and you gave him a call actually from the Mets game, and he was definitely he was in the bunker. He wasn't answering. So what has Ralph been saying?
That he doesn't care if he has this change of heart. He never wants him back. He doesn't trust him. He thinks that he's a coward. He thinks he's a pussy. He thinks that he's a soft. He thinks that it's just a symbol of the new age millennial, that he's greedy. He took all the money from the Colts. The Colts should not pay him a dime, and they should ask for all his signing bonus back. That he stabbed everyone in the back, and nobody should be honoring him. Nobody should be happy about him, and if he was there, he would have booed him too. He doesn't care. He thinks he disgraced the Colts uniform. He says that to compare him to Peyton Manning and the Holy One, Johnny Unitas, is a crock. It's a shame.
Ouch. I mean, that's cold, you know. I mean, Luck had his reasons, but that's funny because Ralph actually sounds like Doug Gottlieb, if you heard what Doug Gottlieb was saying about him. It was the most millennial thing ever to retire.
Oh, I showed him that tweet, and he loved it.
I mean, Gottlieb got dragged for that take. I mean, and I agree with him. I mean, I understand, like, we talked about this last week. Like, the Colts fans, like, you get where they're coming from booing him. Like, they're upset that, you know, you get emotional about it, that he retired with, like, a week before the season. But at the same time, you understand why he did it.
So. I think the timing was bad.
Timing was awful.
But I think the way he did it was shitty.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Especially... What bothers me about what Luck did is that he didn't tell his teammates.
You're right. He told them on the field. Like they had that video of a Jacoby Brissett basically being told, like, on the sidelines. Like, he's like, I'm retiring. He's like, really?
No, he didn't tell his teammates on the sideline. You know what happened, don't you?
No. What happened?
Well, whatchamacall, they got it on. It started getting reported by Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter reported it. The Colts were playing the Bears in a preseason game. Some fans read it. And a couple of fans reading it called over the Colts sideline, hey, Luck is retiring. What's going on? And then they talked to Luck, and then Luck said, yeah, I'm retiring.
Who do you think was more angry, you or all of every Colts fan in America?
I think I was more angry. Yeah, because the thing is, I saw it freaking coming. This isn't the first time. This almost happened a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta. You remember?
Yeah. The 10-8 game.
Right. It's almost like you have like a spidey sense, because I'll you know, I'm always trying to keep tabs on you, like when you go live, and it's like all of a sudden, like once you feel they're within striking distance, I'll just see it on my feed, like going live, and I'm like, something bad's gonna happen because poor Frank just can't catch a break.
It's almost like they did a disservice scoring those extra runs. That if they would have stopped at six, if they would have stopped at, let's say they would have stopped at 6-4, Lugo would have pitched the ninth inning. They would have won.
Well, that's exactly right. If it was 8-4, they didn't tack on those last two runs in the 5-run ninth. Lugo stays in. You're right, and he most likely locks down the save.
So. I mean, and what was that? That was homer number 43, wasn't it?
No, well, 44, and then Alonso hit
44. Yeah, oh yeah, he hit 45 today.
He hit 45 today. So your polar bear plunge watch, Frank, is getting dangerously close.
Hell yeah, it is.
Five more in only 23 games. No, that's at the rate Alonso's been going, you're going to be jumping into that water soon enough.
And Alonso's not trying to do anything but hit home runs, so he's going to get that, because the dude is just literally going for the fence every swing. So he's getting there, Frank.
Well, I'd love to see a Met break a Yankee record.
Well, Alonso too, he's leading the league in home runs right now, and a rookie's never done that.
I mean, it's over. The rookie year, that balloting's over.
Yeah, I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr. was on fire too, but then he suffered the season-ending injury, so now it's kind of no contest with Alonso.
And here's the thing. You could make an argument, well, if the Mets would have not had this last bad week, if the Mets somehow got into the wild card, you could make a legitimate argument, Pete Alonso for MVP.
I mean, that's fair. An argument.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's heating up as of late. He's actually been hitting, you know, more for contact. And then, like we said, the home run.
I mean, personally, I would probably lean maybe towards Bellinger or something like that.
Or Yelich, of course. But
Yelich hasn't really had a great second half.
No, but he's still leading. He's among the league leaders in the batting title, and now McNeil's dropped off a bit with his average.
But batting, you know how I actually like the batting title more than anyone else does.
Yeah,
but batting title doesn't mean as much as it used to.
Because people devalue average now. You know, they look more at the other numbers that go.
To me, when, and it's why I don't really want Tim. I don't want Mike Trout to be the MVP. There should be another award. Personally, I think more value should be put in the Hank Aaron Award as like a Player of the Year Award.
Yeah.
I think for some reason, the Hank Aaron Award never became what I expected it to become. Because the Hank Aaron Award should go to like the best hitter of the season. And for some reason, it just doesn't, it's almost like a popularity contest. There's like a partial fan vote for it. It's like really cheapened. To me, the Hank Aaron Award should be the Player of the Year. The best hitter of the year. And that the MVP should be the player that's most valuable to his team. And with the Angels playing irrelevant baseball all season, and while Mike Trout's the best player, the best hitter, is he really the most valuable? And I don't think he's the most valuable.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely the most valuable player in the league in the standpoint to where he's the overall best player. And that's why we were saying give him his own award, because he's literally...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, the Hank Aaron Award. The Hank Aaron Award should be that award. The best player should go to get the Hank Aaron Award, the best hitter.
The MVP, though, doesn't account for your team's record, because, again, it could... Then it's like another...
A big part of the MVP should be... your importance to your team's winning. And I never like when a guy on a team with a losing record wins the MVP.
I think there's an argument, Frank, that you could be the MVP. I mean, based on the last, you're 48 as what how much sleep are you running on right now, if you don't mind me asking? Because your eyes are closed as you're speaking to us, and your eyes are shut half the time. So what's the tank running on right now?
Fumes.
What were we talking, like 1 hour, 2 hour?
Well, last night I slept about an hour and a half.
Frank, take us on a run through of like your last 24 hours.
Well,
at lose blue.
Well, you know, I always take the that power nap sometime where I might miss the first three innings of a game or pre-game of the Mets or after I eat. So I get home yesterday, and of course I got home late. Traffic stuck. Somebody got run over in Newark, in downtown Newark. And I saw a picture of it. Let's just say he didn't just get run over once.
Oh.
Like someone got run over by the Rutgers Business School. And it was like nobody noticed him in the ground, and it was just like awful. So eventually someone said, "Oh shit, there's a guy here that's becoming like part of the pavement." And so that like they caused a major traffic backup for like miles around.
Jeez.
So getting through, which is a 7 mile trip took me an hour yesterday.
So that's the start of your day.
Well, that's the end of the after getting out, off of work.
So you get off work, you're sitting in traffic, you're miserable as is, and then you just get home, you turn on the TV, eat some food or whatever, and then just walk into the Mets.
Yep, I made some hamburger helper.
Nice. I've watched a few of those before. Love
it. So I have the hamburger helper. I take a nap. When I take a nap, sometimes I'll actually put the Mets game on the radio. So I knew the Mets. I could hear like whenever there's like a run scoring, especially when Howie Rose is calling them. So I knew the Mets had that big 4-run inning and had a 4-1 lead. Eventually, they made it 5-1. And now DeGrom, I just knew he didn't have it that day. That's why I like DeGrom. Yes, DeGrom, when he doesn't have it, I mean, let's compare DeGrom and Syndergaard. Syndergaard, when he didn't have it in Chicago, gave up 10 runs. DeGrom, when he didn't have it yesterday, battled through and was only allowed 2 runs through 7 innings.
That's always been the difference between DeGrom and other pitchers, is even on nights when DeGrom doesn't have it, he'll still battle for 6 or 7 innings and give up 2 runs. That's the definition of we battled, not Mickey Callaway watching Edwin Diaz get whiplash with all the fucking home runs he gives up and saying that he fucking battled when he just gives up fucking home run after home run, blowing game after game.
And meanwhile, I mean, last week DeGrom allowed 4 runs against the Cubs, but those were four flukish runs. It was 2 home runs by one guy, and one was a 3-run homer, which were, like, stunning. Oh, God, here we go again. Let me mute my phone.
The hyenas are calling?
Popular man.
No. Damn it. Why do...
The hyenas must know we're recording tonight. That's not good. But Frank, your live meltdown... Literally, it blew up the internet over the last 24 hours. I mean, you called into Barstool Radio. Everyone was talking about it. It was all over the rundown. They literally talked about it for about 10 minutes on the rundown today.
So anyway, so you have situations like that. And on Monday, Noah Syndergaard was dominant. And Mickey pulls him. Yesterday, Jacob DeGrom was on fumes, and you could tell he's on fumes, and he puts him out for the 8th inning. I mean, this is a man that literally has no feel for what's going on.
No, and that's the scary part. Like, if the Mets even did make the postseason this year, what would this guy do in an elimination game, wild card, postseason, even if they made it? Like, the expectation would be that he would blow it because he has no fucking clue of what he does. And just like I was saying too, like, Terry Collins would never do something like this. Like, back in September games, meaningful games, postseason games, Terry would put in Familia when he was their closer with like a 6-run lead, no matter what. People would complain. They were like, oh, well, why aren't they using – why are they wasting Familia? Like, it's not a high-leverage situation. It's like, no.
But, like, you know, by putting Lugo in the 8th inning, if he would have pitched the 9th inning, that would have been a save.
Exactly. And the only reason he got taken out is because what we said is because of the insurance runs. For the first time ever, I think, in my existence of watching baseball, has insurance runs come back to hurt a team.
Exactly. It's like – the worst thing the Mets did was score those 5 runs.
So, Frank, take us back, though. So, the Mets all of a sudden go on a tear. We open up a massive lead, right? What do you think of there? Do you think, like, do you think it's done? Do you think it's books? Or
I think it's in the books.
Right. And then, now he
takes Lugo out.
Mm-hmm.
And of all the pitchers he puts in is Paul Seward.
Who's pitched better as of late since he's recalled, but
I personally would not have had a problem of him starting Ed Lewis in the ninth with a 6-run lead.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Starting Diaz with a 6-run lead would have been smart because he's not reliable in high leverage situations or close games. So why not put him in the role?
But he's better than fucking Paul Sewald.
Yeah, but even like using Familia or Diaz in that spot would have been smart. I don't know why he was putting Paul Sewald in there.
And it would have been a good opportunity to get them to like build their confidence too. Like you got the cushion. Yeah, all you need to do is get the 3 outs.
He put in a September call up, a bad September call up, a pitcher who is not good, who we've seen time and time again stink it up.
Yeah, and
against a Nationals team that's got a dangerous lineup.
Exactly. And like, why was his leash so long? That's the question. Like, I just.
Yeah, he waited till the bridge was on fire.
With Diaz over the last month has been pitch him in these situations where it's 6-run lead, whatever. Why not just why not let him start?
You put him in a 6-run lead. And I really actually think Ed Luis Diaz's big problem now is it's mental. I think the pressure, he can't handle the pressure.
That's what everyone's been saying, and it's either that or he's tipping his pitches or he's injured. But one of the things, too, Al Leiter was saying on the YouTube broadcast today, he was saying about how Diaz, Suzuki, they interviewed him, and he was sitting fastball. Diaz is not confident in his slider. And they were saying, oh, DeGrom, like, taught him a slider or whatever recently. But it's obviously not helping. Diaz is not confident in his slider. Some people think it could be the baseball, but who knows?
But you know what? With a 6-run lead and nobody on base, you know what you do?
That's
you work on your slider.
Exactly. He has no – but that's the thing. Yeah, that's why if he started – if he didn't come in with traffic on the bases and, a closer game, then he could have done that. But instead, he threw a fucking fastball right down the middle.
Or he could have done Avalon.
Yeah, he gave – that's the thing, too. Like, Sewald had a long leash, but Avalon only got to face one batter. Makes no sense.
He's got to be fired. I don't care if they even get the wild card spot. He's got to go.
So in the history of horrible losses, our friends over at PointsBet created an index scale to actually grade the worst losses of the sports year. It's kind of like how Pro Football Focus started a scale of grading offensive linemen. You could obviously see what offensive lineman plays well or not. But now there's actually a point system for it. So it's called the Bad Beat Index. And for the Mets' 6-run blown lead last night, it scored a 49 on their scale, which was good for actually the 17th worst loss of 2019, just ahead of the Avalanche game and in the Stanley Cup playoffs, where there was a clear offsides and they wound up losing. It also ranks the Saints and Rams were ranked 5th on this list. But last night's Mets game was one of the worst and the worst Major League Baseball game of the season.
Do they have the Steve Smith game on there?
Which game from when?
This is actually Steve Smith of the NHL. Oh, no, was it Doug Smith? It might have been Doug Smith. I think that was the guy's name. Well, anyway, in 1986... the Edmonton Oilers in game seven of the second round against the Calgary Flames. Then it was the Smythe Division Finals. Lost the game on an own goal, where Smith trying to clear the puck accidentally put it in the net. It was the game winning goal. Ooh. And the Oilers won 4 Stanley Cups in 5 years. That was the only series they lost in that period.
That's rough. I mean, it sounds like Sports Encyclopedia could create their own bad beat scale.
You know, that's something I should look into. I look at these people that do like lists on YouTube. I just need a good editor to help me with it.
Yeah, because now this with PointsBet, this is like a new venture that they kind of started, and they only have it for 2019. But, you know, it's pretty fitting that the Mets would be on there. They brought to my attention, too, that the Cubs blew us the same game in May. But, of course, it's in May when it doesn't matter as much. But at the same time, we've seen Edluis Diaz at the wrong end of multiple historical debacle losses this year. Most recently against the Phillies on that walk-off Grand Slam in July. And when Mike Francesa actually pronounced the Mets dead. And then, of course, in L.A. against the Dodgers back in May. And that was the beginning of the end for Edluis, because, you know, he was automatic in April this year, and then since May, he's been awful. So.
And speaking about Mike Francesa, what? It's the end of the road. Oh, the app, the Mike's on app.
Yeah, I saw that news come out.
2018 to 2019. It was a long, strange trip. Right. You know, the problem was it was too expensive.
Yeah, no, $8, what was it? Like
$8.99 a month.
$8.99 a month.
Like $100 a year.
Yeah, yes. And why would anyone pay for it? Like, you could listen to him on WFANradio.com for free, and like you see his live feed enough on his Twitter account and from Funhouse.
If he would have made it, I bet you if he would have made it $40 a year, $39.95. Which is what most apps that like that are. They're like certain political apps that are like that price around that range.
Or you just start low, and then eventually year over year you just increase the price.
I think if you would have slashed the monthly price in half, if it would have been $4.99, and the yearly price would have been $39.95. He would not have lost.
But he didn't offer anything extra. He said he was going to have all this extra stuff, that he was going to do this. He did a little bit of, like, extra NFL stuff on Sunday mornings during the season, but, like, nothing worse.
He actually did live streaming. Live streaming on there occasionally.
Yeah, but
there was really nothing worth paying that extra money.
No, it's not. It's right. But if you pay, if the price I'm given, I bet you'd had triple the subscribers.
And speaking of live streaming, Frank, I want to touch upon this real quick because I got a lot of questions online, not Ask the Tank actually, but people wanted to know. So when you were freaking out, the soda can, right? You didn't go for the straw. And for some reason, people are just fascinated with the fact that you didn't go for the straw. Was it just panic mode, or were you just like, fuck this, I don't give a shit, I'm just going to chug this thing?
I just needed something to drink real fast, and I didn't want to fight for a straw.
Didn't want to fight. Okay. Because the people wanted to know. I got asked the hard-hitting questions here, Frank. They needed to know. So,
Avery, what I want to know is, what's it like not being a Mets fan and witnessing our meltdowns?
It's actually hilarious. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's funny. You know, I had this sense, you know, Clem and KFC actually talked about it. I actually listened to their stuff. They talk about it all the time, how they just couldn't believe that the Mets, you know, dragged you guys back in. And then it just happens every single time. They'll drag you in and you get this hope. Like, I guarantee you guys thought they really had a good chance at making the playoffs. And as a fan of another team, I felt like there was just no chance. And I kind of feel bad. I mean, they were really playing well for a long time. No one expected it, but they dragged you guys back in. And it's really funny to watch, to be honest. I hate to be a dick, but yeah.
The Mets always teasing, never pleasing.
No, the thing is, like, going into the Atlanta series, everything was great until Barstool at the Park. That's my take on that. Like, the Mets were in it, you know, things were going well. And the Mets really, they got swept. Getting swept in back-to-back series was a killer, you know, when there's not much ground, you know, that they could – they have a lot of ground to make up, being 10 games under 500 in the hole back in July. And, you know, they came roaring back. And I think that if they, you know, somehow managed to not get swept by the Braves or Cubs, just wound up losing those series, like, things would be better. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, it's definitely now it's their playoff chances are down to like 7%. And
Avery, it's also how they do it, though. Being a Mets fan, like, we never lose just normal. It's in like over the top, and like you want to go to work with your head down. You're just embarrassed to like walk the streets.
I was no good at work today.
Did you guys see that? Frank, you go ahead. Sorry.
I was no good at work today. I was like a zombie.
Well, did you guys see the record of – I forget. It was like the record
– Yeah, I know what it is. You're talking about what the Mets were after
800. Yeah, it was like
860-0, and the Nationals were like when they were leading after like 8 innings or 9 innings with one out, and the Nationals were like 0 in like 700 when they were in that same situation, and literally – that streak ended for both teams on the same night. I think I heard that on Clem's thing Gotta Believe Potter.
Yeah, absolutely insane.
Well, in the MLB this year, teams were 274-0 when leading by 6 runs in the ninth inning, and now that's 274-1. Yeah, but you know that's the worst loss in Mets franchise history. Then I saw a fucking tweet today from Tim Britton. He goes, on this date, September 4th in 1969, the Mets were 5 back of the Cubs after suffering a devastating walk-off loss the day before. And I was like, wow. Just like, that's exactly like, why the fuck did we need to see that? Like, the Mets fans, like, you know, we just are looking for anything to pull us back in, make us optimistic again. Like, the Mets are literally like our crack. Like, when they win, it's like, everyone, like, I started thinking in my head, like, okay, like, if they string a couple wins together, like, maybe they'll get back in it. Maybe they'll have a chance. But, like, it's really, like, it's really more than a long shot right now.
At that, yeah, but in 1969, around this time, the Cubs started teetering.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the Cubs have, they've been pretty hot. The only good thing is they're facing the Brewers for a 3-game set tomorrow. Mets head back home to face the Phillies.
Oh, the Brewers are done. The Brewers are toast.
Yeah, but, I mean, it might wind up being closer, you know. It just depends. The Brewers have not been very good, but...
Well, look at the home standards coming up for the Mets. They're going, 3 games above .500 now?
Yeah, and they have the Phillies, Diamondbacks, and Dodgers for 4, which is a killer. Like
I bet you the Mets leave New York, they're back under .500. I see 3-7, 2-8.
The real issue is, it's like now the Mets, they finally got reinforcements back on offense. Like Robbie Cano on base 4 times today, 3 hits, 2-run homer. Brandon Nimmo has been great since he came back. But the problem is the Mets have 3 reliable relievers in their bullpen in Lugo, Justin Wilson, and Luis Avila. And everyone else, it's a crapshoot. Even Familia has been pitching. He pitched a great August, but now he's kind of done shitty the last couple of days.
Oh, he was terrible today. I actually thought he was about to give up the lead in the seventh, and then when the Mets had to act the sixth, I should say. Then he had to bring in Lugo in the seventh, and of course Lugo pitched 2 innings, and that left Justin Wilson in the ninth.
Yeah, but great news, Frank. Rob Gesellman started playing catch today in hopes to be back before the season ends.
He's not coming back.
Even if he did, I don't think that he would be effective. But
I actually had deep, deep fears that Mickey Callaway was going to bring in Edwin Diaz in the ninth inning to say, "Well, I wanted to get him back on the beam." And this morning, you know, the players got to play, and I just got to say, we're going to shake it off. We're going to shake it off.
I just really like they should have just IL'd Edwin Diaz. Like he really is. They only win when he doesn't pitch.
You know. I'm starting to come together with what Mickey Callaway's MP3 player is like. I mean, we all know he likes to praise you to start singing that whenever he loses.
That went over well today.
His other favorite song is by Taylor Swift, "Shake It Off." You know, you gotta just play, and I shake it off. I shake it off. You see, that's what we do. We shake it off.
Frank, what are your thoughts on Nick's remix of Praise You?
It's the Mickey Calloway song. That should be Mickey Calloway's walk-up song.
I would be lying if I said I. Normally, I don't listen to like my own stuff that much, but I listened to that song in the car today a few times on the way back. I listened to it. It was pretty good, pretty catchy.
My favorite's the JG Wentworth, JD Davis song remix with Frank. He goes and it opens. He goes, "The Mets have no fucking balls." that's like my all time favorite line.
It's just
rewarded.
It's just terrible. It's terrible what's going on with this team right now. Mickey Calloway is such a blight. He honestly is. I think an average manager could have this team closer to the wild card. He is a piss poor manager. He might be the worst manager in baseball.
I mean, yeah. Certainly with the bullpen, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What I don't get is he was a reliever. He was a pitching coach. And granted, pitching coaches typically make terrible managers. But to not understand or realize when your pitcher doesn't have it. Realize when the pitcher is losing it. Realize when the difference between the pitcher being good to keep him going in the game. He has no feel. It's like he has everything already thought out before the game begins, and that's what he's going to stick to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. Like, it's clear that with a better manager, they'd at least probably have 5 more wins with this talent on this team. I just, like, Callaway does not know what he's doing. He was not qualified to get it, and I really hope the rumors about Brody are true, that he doesn't like him, and maybe he'll pick his own manager.
And to be honest, Frank, if Callaway just followed you on Twitter and he saw when you went live, he would know, like, what to do. Like, that's actually not a bad idea. If he just sees you go live, he knows that he's fucking up and it's time to just, like, change the strategy. I think that's what he should be doing.
I'm not totally opposed to him pulling Lugo yesterday, but you got to put in somebody that's actually capable of closing the aim. And I think that would have been a perfect chance to put in Edluis Diaz with a 6-run lead, not bringing in where all of a sudden now it's a 12-alarm emergency and he has no margin of error.
You could have gone to anybody but Paul Sewald to start that inning. Could have been Avilon, Familia, or Edluis Diaz, or even Justin Wilson. But I would have saved Justin Wilson and, again, would have brought him in for Avilon once Avilon couldn't get the job done.
I mean, Paul Sewald occasionally will come in and pitch well. But he is just so unreliable. You can't. Even with a 6-run lead, and with this lineup,
yeah,
you gotta look at your opponent sometimes. The Nationals didn't put anyone on the bench. They didn't wave the white flag like Mickey Calloway does.
Yeah, I mean, we could fucking complain about the Mets for literally all night, and you'd be getting another hour of sleep or less, but. I guess we'll move over to the Yankees now. Avery, they won again tonight, beating the Rangers. Now fighting for home field advantage. Not sure. Did the Astros win tonight?
I do not know.
But the Yankees came in today with a half game up on the Astros. So coming into today, 22 games left for both the Yankees and Astros. 92 now wins for the Yankees and 90 or 91 wins for the Astros. So the Yankees playing teams above 500, they only have 6 of their last 22 matchups are against teams of 500 or better. And then for the Astros, it's even easier that they only are playing 4 teams above 500 in their next 22. So that race is definitely going to be interesting. The Yankees are hot. It's also like, what do you do if you're the managers in these last 2 weeks? Like your teams reach above 100 wins. Like, don't you want to start? You want to start resting some guys, but you want to win the games at the same time, because home field advantage is really important in the playoffs, especially with two teams like this. So I don't know what do you do in that situation.
I mean, first of all, what can I say? I mean, the Yankees are they're dominant. They find ways to win every night. I mean, they're the comeback kids. They have the most comeback wins in the MLB. I mean, this year, Aaron Boone has completely turned it around. I'm sure you guys know Yankees fans were all over him last year. This season is completely different. And when players start to come off of the injured list, it's unbelievable. I mean, they perform. There's players this year overperforming. It's just been fantastic. But in terms of the other teams like the Astros and whatnot, I think if the Yankees just keep sticking to their game, I mean, you look at how well James Paxton pitched the other night. He had 12 strikeouts. I mean, he was just looked like the James Paxton they traded for. So, I mean, I really think Cashman, I still think he should have gotten a starting pitcher, but I like the confidence in the group right now. Severino and Dellin Betances seem very close. They're both pitching in Trenton. I think might be tomorrow or Friday. I'm not sure which day it is, but I mean, man, things are really starting to turn around for the Yankees. I mean, obviously, things have already been good, but in terms of their injured players, that you could see, I mean, a full Yankees lineup could easily beat the Astros, in my opinion.
So you do think that they have a legitimate shot in a 7-game series?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I wouldn't count them out. You just look at the way they've been playing all season. I don't really see any reason why they wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it comes down to for me, I think that it's going to go to 7 games ALCS between both teams. That it's going to be similar to 2017. The difference maker really is going to be probably the starting pitching. You know, the Astros rotation has been great. Garrett Cole and Verlander, I believe they both had back to back 14 strikeout performances. They've been insane. And someone on Twitter was like, "Yeah, you know, you've hit a peak in life when you strike out 14 batters in the game and then go home to fuck Kate Upton."
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, he's just living the life.
Yeah, that he really is. And even he got his World Series ring 2 years ago with the Astros, but you know, they have their whole core together still. The Yankees have their core and then some. It's all just really depends what the Yankees get out of their pitching in the postseason and if Severino comes back and is effective. Can Domingo Herman step up? We know what Tanaka is in the postseason. He's gonna give you some great performances.
Avery, real quick, do you talk to Carrabas at all?
Did you talk to him about during this? During the year, yeah, a little bit, but nothing crazy.
Because today he basically said he was on with KFC and he was like, "You guys are not going to beat the Astros." Like he's super adamant about the fact that you just guys can't hang with them from a starting pitching standpoint. So I'm just curious, like. I mean, I obviously don't watch them as much as you do. I know you said that they're you know, they're firing on all cylinders, but like, what do you see with the Yankees rotation that like does what did he say hold water at all or no? Or is it you think it's just a kind of bias?
Well, here's my thing, and you can attest it to Domingo Herman's record. It's just the fact that their bats have been able to keep up with their pitching. I mean, when the Yankees pitchers are on, I think they're just unstoppable. I just think the Yankees have no way to lose when their pitchers are on. Now, when their pitchers are off, it's up to the bats to make up for it. And I think, you know, when you get a guy like Aaron Judge who becomes hot, and you get a guy like, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, if he comes back and gets hot, I mean, there's guys who are willing to put their bats on the line to help out the pitching. And some nights you don't get it, and that's usually the nights the Yankees lose, where, you know, there's times where the pitching is on and the hitting is off. So I think it's just finding the balance, and, you know, when the postseason comes, that's when they really need to step that up.
So who do you leave off the postseason roster? Jay Happ or CC Sabathia?
I'm going to say Happ. I think Happ is the odd man out here.
I think it depends on the health, though. I don't know if you're going to actually see a healthy CC Sabathia again.
That's what Boone was saying on Francesa today. That Francesa said he was like, "Well, if CC's back and healthy, if you guys see a role for him on the postseason roster, will he be on it?" He's like, "Oh, for sure." Boone said that he definitely sees a role for Sabathia on this postseason roster if he's healthy, like Frank said. But the thing is, they're not just, you know, they're not going to take him, obviously, if they don't see him contributing.
And, right.
You know, it hasn't been a good year for him. But at the same time, it's been a terrible year for Jay Happ, despite having 10 wins.
Jay Happ is pitching like crap.
Yeah, he has not been good. Francesa put the curse on him last year, you know, praising him. And and loving everything about Hap. But, I mean, Hap was good when he came over to the Yankees at first. But this is just definitely has not been his year. I mean, he's a veteran journeyman. You know, he's an innings eater, and he's had some success, but also he's had some pretty bad years. But, yeah, so.
Yeah. He's definitely having a poor season, to say the least. But in the end, you know, there's players who come alive in the playoffs. So I'm not going to give up on Hap immediately. I think that's where, you know, he's had a crappy season, but if he's on the playoff roster, I'm going to have full trust in him until it gives me a reason not to trust him. But I mean, you know, there's so many Yankees pitchers that could fill that role. Yeah. I mean, you look at Jordan Montgomery coming up. I mean, he could end up being a long relief or even take a place for Hap. So we'll see what happens.
Is he back?
He is almost back. He's getting there, though. We're hoping soon.
When's the last time he pitched? It's been like 2 years, right?
Yeah, it's been a while. He had surgery, and, you know, now we're just hoping that he makes his way back.
Was he a part of that 2017 playoff run?
Yes. Yeah, he was. I think so.
That's pretty forgettable. I feel like that's forgettable because I know
it's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that he came on and had some success. And then as soon as he did, he got Tommy John. Well, I just didn't really remember if he was a part of that postseason team that year. And that was like really the last time CC was, you know, dominated as a player. I'd say CC had a really good run there too.
Oh, yeah.
Games for them. But you know, it's different this year. They're not going to have him in their postseason rotation. He might, you know, be stick on and be cut pitch out of the bullpen, but you know, that's kind of a long shot at this point too.
Right.
So who do you think if there is, they're going to have to leave someone, someone's going to get snubbed from the postseason roster. Who do you think they're going to have to, from a positional standpoint, who do you think they're going to have to keep off?
You know, we've actually had this conversation a lot between, you know, the Short Porch guys and whatnot. It's really going to be tough. I don't know. I mean, you're going to see guys like honestly, it really all depends on injury. I mean, you know, the Yankees have been plagued with injuries this year, but I mean, people keep saying, you know, what happens with Stanton and whatnot. I mean, you got to bring Stanton back. When he comes back healthy, I mean, he's got to be on that roster. So, I mean, I think you're going to see guys like Mike Tauchman get the odd man out. You're going to see guys like Cameron Maven get the odd man out. So,
I think Cameron Maven makes the roster, actually.
You do? Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be so tough.
Especially since it looks like Hicks is not going to be around.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody is healthy, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I'd like to see Cameron Maven make it. I think he's definitely earned it this year, for sure, without a doubt.
So who's going to play center? Gardner, I see, has been playing center field. So Gardner's going to be the center fielder of Hicks. I think Hicks will make it back by the postseason. I mean, Boone was saying today that Hicks is behind schedule, but I mean, he's still got a couple weeks to go still. So I think he'll be back.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens. It's just so hard to tell now because you don't really know like full timetables of injuries. Right. So yeah, I'm having a tough time even telling, you know, I just hope for the best. That's really where I'm at.
Yeah. Because no one knows, and especially Hicks. Hicks has had a rough year, too, this year, health-wise.
Oh, yeah.
You just don't know. He's had a rough go of it. Before we start to wrap things up, let's switch over to some really good news. We're finally here. Tomorrow night, the NFL season is finally back after 7 months.
That's good news.
Bears and Packers.
go Fins. Go Fins.
Yeah. Fins up. Yeah, Fins up. Fins up Ship's Creek. Fins up shit. I mean, this is my football season. We're tanking for Tua. Tanking for Tua. Tanking for Tua. Tagler, whatever the hell his name is. Oh, we're tanking for Tua. Tanking for Tua. We may not even win 2 games. Ooh, yes, sir. The Miami Dolphins, number one on the clock. That's what this year's song is going to be. I honestly think there's a good chance Dolphins go winless.
Frank, that's not the worst thing, though. I mean, we've seen the Browns do it. And
look, oh, where they are now. I totally think the Dolphins saw what the Cleveland Browns had and said, you know what? That's what we're going to do.
I mean, they need wholesale changes. The Dolphins go 7-9 every year and beat the Patriots. And
yeah, so it's just going to suck the next year or two. It's really going to suck. It's going to be, I mean, did they start the season with the Ravens? They never played well against the Ravens, so maybe they could keep that game within 10 points.
The Ravens, Frank, the Ravens' defense is going to kill that offensive line, and they're going to kill Fitzmagic.
Yeah, and then week two, yep. Week two, they have a home game. The last time Dolphins won a game was last year, Miracle in Miami. There ain't going to be no miracle this time. They're playing the Patriots in week two. And what I expect is basically, I just have visions of that kid going, stop, stop, stop. They're already dead. I mean, I expect that to be me about midway through the second quarter. I think the Patriots, the way they lost that game, and just seeing that Dolphin uniform, are going to go out there and they're going to win that game by no less than 40 points.
I think now for the Dolphins, I think their best strategy is kind of just like fly under the radar. Maybe not even be like the worst team in the league, but just like fly under the radar. I mean, like, it's not like they sell tickets anyways. They just need to be that team like nobody talks about. Like, after this trade, they just need to like completely fly under the radar and retool everything, because if they're able to do that, I think they'll emerge in, you know, 3 to 4 years. But they're not close right now.
I looked at the over under. The over under is 4. I tried to bet the under over. If you bet the under for $10, you win back $11.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. It's just the odds are probably.
And to get the number one pick, they're at -320.
It just stinks that Trevor Lawrence isn't entering the draft next year. That's what stinks.
Well, the Dolphins might be bad enough 2 years in a row, but they might look at next year's draft and go, you know what? Let's hold off on getting our quarterback in, because I think the Dolphins next 2 years are looking at 3-29.
Frank, was Josh Rosen that bad that they couldn't start him?
I don't know why. He actually played well in preseason.
Like, did Fitzpatrick, like, why? Like, what is the point of starting him? You know, see what you have with Rosen.
I actually think it's preservation. I think the Dolphins' first four games are absolutely brutal, where they're just going to get creamed in every game. Then they have a bye week. Then they play the Redskins, which might be the game they win.
The worst part is they talked about trading Laremy Tunsil for Jadeveon Clowney, and instead, Clowney gets sent to the Seahawks. The Dolphins don't get anyone, but they still trade Tunsil.
Well, the one thing I got to say, though, is this. They got two ones and a two.
You got it. I mean, that's all. You got to do that all day. I mean, if you're looking at who wins that trade, I mean, I actually think Miami
wins that trade by
a mile.
Is that what they got?
They got this year's one. I think they got this year's one, two, and next year in 2021, one.
The Texans?
Dude, there were tweets where like actual like sports writers were like, "Are the Texans drunk? Like, someone please take away the Texans' phones," because like, dude, that's a horrendous deal. Like, it's horrendous.
Could not believe what the Dolphins got for Tunsil. Tunsil is good. They basically the Texans think he's Anthony Munoz to pull that trade.
But look at what the Giants got for Odell. Like, that compared to what they got for Tunsil. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and I'm a big backer of that trade. But
do you realize that the Dolphins are going to be the worst team in football this year? The Texans, are they really a playoff team?
They better be.
Frank, so the Dolphins could potentially have the number one pick plus another first-round pick plus two the next year and a two.
Yeah. So and if they decide that they're not that impressed with Tua,
they'll wait for Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence.
They could wait for Lawrence. They could trade out of the number one pick and probably get more number one picks.
I like Jake Fromm better than Tua.
I don't like Jake Fromm. He reminds me too much of Ryan Trashy Hill.
Tua also is like a franchise guy. Like he strikes me as the type where, like, he could be the face of Miami. You know, like he's more than just a guy on the field that can play well from a character standpoint.
Want to hear something insane? Adam Schein on CBS, formerly of SNY, of course, the Loudmouths, picked the fucking Bills to win the wild card over the Jets this year. Like, what the hell?
Buffalo, is he on drugs? The Buffalo Bills are terrible.
Terrible.
They stink.
I don't understand that.
Well, I did my NFL preview. I picked the Bills to be like 5-11.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't hate Josh Allen. I don't think he's that good. The 2017 quarterback draft class was way overhyped. Like, Darnold and Baker are pretty good. Like, they seem like they're going to be good. But the other QBs, the other two, Allen and
Rosen.
And Rosen, they were overhyped. People were actually saying that, like, Giants Daily and all these other accounts were saying that the Giants should have drafted two of those other quarterbacks ahead of Saquon Barkley. Like, that would have been idiotic.
I think Barkley was the right choice. I still do.
I'm telling you, it's the fantasy football effect, man. The fantasy football keeps these guys relevant for some reason. Like, you look at Josh Allen, and people are just skewed to think that he's really talented. Like, I think as an NFL quarterback, I think he stinks. Like, he throws bombs, and he runs for 60 yards a game because the Bills are horrendous.
Yeah.
That's
fair. And they released Shady McCoy, who, of course, he had a bad year last year with a bad O-line. But
they're not trying to win, man. They're trying to see what they got. There's no chance they're trying to win.
Did you see where Shady ended up?
Yep, yeah, with the Chiefs, and he'll probably flourish. And back with Andy Reid, too, and Mahomes.
I think that could end up being quietly one of the big moves of the offseason.
For sure, yeah. That was really just a great move for both the player and the team. And reuniting him with Andy Reid. Of course, he played under Andy Reid for his first three years in the league. So the other news in the NFL, big news as of this morning, Ezekiel Elliott finally signs his extension, $50 million guaranteed on 6 years, $90 mil, which could equate to over $103 million.
I think we're going to have the worst Super Bowl ever this year.
Don't say the Cowboys, please.
Patriots, Cowboys.
No shot. Deck. Like we said before, Dak's a player who you can win with, but you don't win because of him. And once you get to the playoffs, that fucking comes back to bite you in the ass. That's why people.
There's a thing in the NFL, and it's the referees. Look at me, I'm the referee. I'm in full control of the game. When the referees look at the Dallas Cowboys star, and they all want to sing "Hopelessly Devoted to You." We try to make you win every game. Each holding call, we look the other way. But when someone comes close and sneezes on you, out will come a yellow flag because we're totally devoted to you. We got to go to Cabo on Jerry's yacht. Yeah, that's what we got.
Well, the thing is about the Patriots and Cowboys both get a lot of calls their way, so it'd be like the Spider-Man meme where they're pointing at each other.
Yeah, there's times I literally fully expect the referees come out with the star, and start coming out in a star formation with the Dallas Cowboy and waving the Dallas Cowboy flag. In fact, I actually saw one referee; he actually threw a flag one time, and he accidentally threw his Dallas Cowboys team flag that he had in his pocket.
The thing is, so the Cowboys are favored by seven Sunday against the Giants.
I'll take the Cowboys to cover.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, concern over here from Giants Nation, Giants new right tackle, Mike Remmers, who looked good all preseason. He's had a minor back surgery in March, which is why teams were hesitant to sign him, sat out of practice today. With what they're calling an illness/back, as in, I guess, back soreness. So that's something to keep an eye on. If he can't go, DeMarcus Lawrence will feast on whoever his backup's Chad Slade. So that's, you know, that's not good. That's kind of worrisome for Giants fans. And definitely, you know, keeps that line up at 7.5. But I mean, the Giants defense is a concern this year, but their offense put up 35 points without Odell and without Kevin Zeitler and Mike Remmers on their line last year, the last game of the season, against the same Dallas defense. So I think it'll be, you know, from a scoring standpoint, the game will be pretty good, unless these offenses are still rusty because it's the first game, which is definitely a possibility. Zeke's coming back after being in Cabo all summer, and they said they're going to give him 20 to 25 carries, but, you know, I guess we'll see. We'll
20 to 25 reps. They said reps. So, like,
what does that mean, though?
I think it's not like like he could be on the field and not be a part of the play. You know what I mean? Like the play is not designed for him.
But they're only going to – so, like, where does that – does that include carries or is that play – if you only
yeah,
plays-
it would. It would include – they would talk – I was listening to CBS Fantasy today, and they said if they're talking reps, they're talking about literally how many times – like, him being on the field for that amount of time.
That's
like,
not that many plays.
So snaps, essentially.
Yeah, that's not a lot of snaps. So I don't know. I mean, Tony Pollard had a good preseason, and the Giants' defense stinks. But, I mean, yeah, I don't really know what to expect. And then also we got the Jets and Bills on Sunday. That the spread is only at 3 for that game, which I don't understand. I think the Jets are going to steamroll the Bills.
Oh yeah, I totally expect. I expect the Jets to win that one easily. I think it's going to be gangrene all day.
Yeah, I mean, hey, besides what team is set up to do what, who's tanking, and what's going to happen, the NFL is the most unpredictable league, and that's what makes it the best league, in my opinion. Before we move over to Ask the Tank and start wrapping things up, did you guys see Antonio Brown complaining about his $54,000 worth of fines he got from the Raiders?
He is the biggest bitch in the NFL. He is a bitch. There is no other way to describe him. He is a soft-ass bitch.
Soft-ass bitch. We got it. Love it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Frank.
I mean, I don't know how you can complain about that stuff, like how Antonio Brown can complain about stuff, because what are the Raiders supposed to do? Like, you have to fucking discipline him. If you don't, what kind of message does that send to the rest of the players?
Well, that's what happened to the Steelers. The Steelers let him get away with murder.
Yeah, and you see what happened with that, and it was a fucking total disaster. So,
He is not worth it. I don't care how good he is.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I was hesitant to take him in my fantasy draft because of that, because of how crazy he is. You know, he'll ball out if he plays, but the thing is, like, he only wants to play on his terms, and, you know, it hasn't worked out for him so far. So, you know, he's a fucking wild card. So the next thing you know, he'll be fucking retiring.
So do we want to wrap it up? Ask the Tank real quick. We only have a couple.
Yeah, take it away.
All right, Frank. Brian P. Brewster wants to know, he says, seriously, do your neighbors ever complain about the noise?
I get some complaints, but not that many.
That's fair. Nothing serious, though? So just your basic, like, hey, would you mind keeping it down? Like, we know you're internet famous. It's okay. And then last one we have, I think this one's may have been asked before. Micah Kellner wants to know, who's your ideal choice to manage the Mets next season?
Joe Girardi.
Which won't happen because they won't pay for a manager.
Yeah, if not him, I mean, there's other choices out there. I mean, John Gibbons. The Cubs might fire or not re-sign Joe Madden. And Joe Madden has worked in this type of situation before.
He's going to want serious money, though, now.
He might.
All right. Well, that's all we got, guys, for this week.
But and if not them, here's a guy who's never managed before, but he's supposed to be like a hot candidate. Joe McEwing.
We've heard that. We heard that 2 years ago when the Mets were, I believe the Mets interviewed him.
And here's another one that The Nationals' first base coach, they say, is a good managerial candidate. Tim Bogart. Of course, I didn't like him as a player. I hated him as a player. I actually called him Tim Bozo when he was a player. By the way, he was a Met. I don't know. You guys are probably too young to remember Tim Bogart. He was like this, like...
I would say,
yeah.
Yeah, I remember him.
I would say he's like fits the mold of like a Ty Kelly type.
Yeah, I remember playing him. And I think he was MLB 94.
And he had this one really good game, and then he like tried to he was actually safe, but he did an inside the park home run and sliding in home plate. He like got like destroyed his shoulder.
Oof. Did he need a slide? Was it a necessary slide?
Yeah. Like the catcher didn't make the tag or drop the ball, and he like slid into his shin protectors and like separated his shoulder.
Eesh. Well, on that note, we'd like to thank all our loyal listeners for tuning in every week. Remember to download, rate, subscribe, and review. And thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Allow Me to Be Frank.
We're tanking for Tua, tanking for Tua. We may not even win a single game. And come on, did I?
Motherfucking son of a bitch! What did you mean? What did you mean? But he's actually standing there! I'm gonna praise you like I should! Look at Mickey Calloway! Look at Mickey Calloway! Mickey Calloway is smiling! Look at Mickey Calloway!